Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of those skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy, healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth. Where are we going today?
Well, Brad, today we are going to get a little mystical, little off the beaten path, and talk about humanistic astrology and a bit of Reiki. And how we got here is a little bit of a path itself. Because this quarter, I live in quarters being a professor, but this quarter I was lucky enough to have two interns helping me with the show, which has been really fun because they brought a different energy and different interests to the program. And one of my interns, Sophie, said, I'm really interested in the field of Reiki. And I found a practitioner who does not only Reiki, but also does humanistic astrology. And I hadn't had any experience with either one of those in any sort of way. So it was interesting to kind of hear the pitch and what that was going to be like. And so we are going to dive into an area that isn't part of my expertise and kind of learn together today. And also in the keeping of doing things differently with my new interns and with the help of my daughter, Kelly, we are doing Instagram Live. So the show is not only live today on the radio, but if you are part of the Instagram world, you're interested, you can go to The Reluctant Therapist on your Instagram, and we are live right now, so you can see myself and my guest, Curtis Williams. And Sophie, you should click back on so people can see you as well to give you credit for bringing in some guests. So there, Sophie. And so I don't have a lot of background in this other to say that there are many paths to healing. And I think that's really important to think about, that when it comes to our mental health and well-being, there are a lot of ways we can find balance or grounding or a sense of wellness or wholeness. And part of our job, part of the work we have to do as human beings is to find those paths or those practices or those beliefs that support and ground our mental health and well-being in such a way that creates joy and peace and satisfaction in our lives. Like, those things really are not external. I mean, it's nice to have enough money to buy your groceries and to pay your bills. That would be fundamental. But when it comes to just about anything else in life, there's not much external that's going to keep us feeling well if our internal dialogue, our internal narrative is not balanced or a place that we feel comfortable in. And so throughout the course of these shows, you know, I'm always trying to bring in different lenses, different perspectives, different ways that we can tap into our mental health and well-being and see what works for us. You know, talk therapy is one path. The medical model is another path. There is a combination of the two, as we talked about in our conversation last week with Dr. McGee. There are alternative therapies like surf therapy and equine therapy. There's the rising use of psychedelics in therapy. And then there are therapies that we don't really recognize as being therapeutic, like color therapy or aromatherapy. And for some people, it would be the work, body work, energy work, like Reiki or astrology, tuning into and understanding the potential of our lives based on the planets as they were aligned when we were born. The bottom line is, if you have faith in something, if you believe in something, that it's going to be healing, if you put an intention into that experience of, I will feel better when I participate in that, that is the beginning of your path to wellness. And then if you can put on top of that a practitioner or a clinician that you feel comfortable with, that you feel connected to, that feels safe, then you've got a great recipe for healing. So that's how I want to set up today, that the conversation today may not be for everyone, but if we have an open mind, there's always a nugget of something that might open up other doors and windows and avenues for our own mental health, wellness, and well-being. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can find us on our Instagram, Instagram Live, if you want to check that out, The Reluctant Therapist. You can also find us on our Facebook page. We post the shows each week, pictures of our guests. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org, and all of our shows are cataloged there. Or if you'd like, you can go to your podcast, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe. Our show will be uploaded to your device, and you can listen at your convenience. And if you spend a couple of minutes and leave a review, it helps other people also learn about the show. You also have the opportunity to participate today if you'd like to give us a call, 805-549-8855. Although we can't take the calls on the air, our wonderful engineer, Brad, will be happy to read your questions, and we will try our best to get an answer for you. 805-549-8855. I have no idea where we're going today. That's what makes this show so much fun. So I'm glad you've tuned in. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to start our conversation with Curtis Williams. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCVX.
The Reluctant Therapist continues here on listener-supported Public Radio KCBX.
All right, here we are. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Curtis Williams. He is a practicing humanistic astrologer, been practicing for over 28 years. He also is a certified medical astrologer, shamanic practitioner. He has training in natal astrology, relocation astrology, couples, synastry, mundane astrology, rectification astrology. I don't know if we have enough hours in the day to go through all of Curtis's experience in the field of astrology. And on top of that, Curtis has also been a practitioner in the field of Reiki since 2002, and he has a master teacher certification and a E3 emotional energetic evolution training, which we're going to learn about today. Curtis works very hard to integrate both of these predictive and healing modalities through astrology and Reiki to help bring better understanding and clarity for his clients. Welcome, Curtis. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me on your show.
So there is a lot of things that you're good at, but before we dive into your areas of expertise, I'm curious to know, what was the path of your life that led you to even being interested in astrology or humanistic astrology?
Yeah, it's a great question. And like pretty much every one of the other modalities you listed, certain events came up in my life. So just to give you a brief backstory, I moved up here with my family. I was 28, had a daughter, wasn't even a year. And I was building houses. I got injured on the site. And then from there, everything changed, my life, my family's life. And so somebody, one of my wife's colleagues, gave me a book on astrology. And from the moment I opened that book, I really haven't looked back since. It was just, yeah, I get this. So, you know, that's how I got started. And then everything progressed from there.
Was it an injury that forced you out of your profession and having to find a new path? Or were you just so interested in this, you left construction?
Yeah, I would like to say that I would be able to go back, but I didn't, and subsequently ended up having multiple back surgeries.
So this opened doors in both ways for your professional life and your personal growth.
Absolutely, yes.
And so what did you learn about yourself that was so life-changing at that, at the beginning? And where did you, who did you go see?
That, good questions there too. I, unfortunately, at least when I started, there were no teachers for astrology. And there, I mean, I don't know. I'm imagining there are some here on the Central Coast now, but then there weren't any. So I pretty much was self-taught. And I think a majority of astrologers are. And then those that move on end up getting personal instruction from, you know, mentors that are good astrologers or not, but that's the direction that I went in.
And what was it? I'm always curious, like, what is that aha that resonated with you where you said, I get this, or this connects to me on a deeper level. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, I was opening that book. I was on the couch and I opened that book, started reading, and it was boom. It was, I'd never read any books on astrology. Really had no particular interest. I was doing other things, building houses and raising my family. And curiously enough, those are the type of life events that change a lot of people's lives. And either you go with it or you don't. And then, you know, it's either or.
Did you, I know I'm keep picking at this, but because this is, I really want to know, was there something about the alignment of the planets or something that it said about your path or something that it illuminated about your personality that that made you say, oh wait, I need to go another direction?
Right. Well, and that's a good question. I'm sorry if I haven't answered that thoroughly, but yes, there are charts that we call solar arc, the progress charts, and they show movement of the planets as we go along in life. And mine showed exactly what was going on, but I wasn't sophisticated enough to interpret that yet. Mm-hmm. And plus, the lawyers and the doctors kept me tied up for quite a long time. So
I would imagine that there's a lot of math that's involved in understanding of maybe physics. And I wanted to say something that will make me sound dumb, and that's okay, because I was 19 years old. But when I was going to school at UC Santa Barbara when I was 19 years old, I signed up for an astrology class that satisfied one of my general education requirements.
Really?
And when I got to the class, I realized that it was not astrology, but astronomy. Oh. And that was all math that I was horrific at. But I recognized that in the reading over the astrology work that you do and some of the more modern astrology, there is a lot of math involved in that. I mean, it's not astronomy. I know the difference now. No. but there is a lot of math. It's not just guessing.
Right. Before programs came out that you could download on your computer, I had to use a minimum 4 books to construct a chart. And I'm not that good with math either. But I got better, and I was able to construct birth charts, and I'm so glad that they came out with programs for story, because now I just put the birth information and off we go, and it's like 10 seconds.
Wow. So you can do a lot very quickly. So let's,
yes.
So for people who don't know or that look at astrology and they think it's what they're reading in the newspaper every week under their sign, what is the difference between newspaper astrology and humanistic astrology?
Right. Okay. Good questions. The paper astrology are the ones that, I don't even people read newspapers anymore, but like on my Yahoo page to the right, it shows the sign and you know, what stage the sun's in. That's just for entertainment. That's not really going to affect you. And some people say, well, that day it did. Well, yeah. What's the saying? A clock is right. A broken clock is right twice a day. You know, so something's going to pan out. But it really doesn't apply to the individual. There are so many more things to consider.
And so what is humanistic astrology? How does it determine, or how did you figure out your sign? Because I'm assuming it's not just your birth month.
Right. Humanistic astrology applies to the individual. You're not looking at the planets and what we call generational planets, like the I still use Pluto as a planet. Science has downgraded to a dwarf planet, I think. But those planets stay in a sign for a long time. So therefore, i.e. generational planets. But the planets, you know, they just, they move around in their precession, and they've been around for forever. And I bet you there's some more out there. But, you know, getting back to your question, which was, again, please remind me, I got lost there.
That's okay. Well, because also I was thinking, well, if we find more planets, then astrology is going to get flipped upside down. But how do you determine, so because again, you know, I was born in March, so I consider myself an Aries, but right. That really doesn't say anything about me in humanistic astrology. What are you determining my sign to be then? Under humanistic astrology.
Okay. All right. Well, in humanistic astrology, again, it's for the individual. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is we apply all of the different aspects. So there's three very important parts of your chart. And I'll tell you right now, that is your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign.
Okay.
All the other ones are important, but not as important as those three. So, So as a humanist, in astrology, it's about finding the individual rather than all that background white noise for the person who was born with Aries, or you know, say Scorpio rising. It's putting all of them together for the individual.
So, how do you determine your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign? How are those figured out?
Right. Again, with a astrological program.
Okay.
Or an ephemeris. If you have an ephemeris, most people don't. And that, an ephemeris is a book for 100 years. It shows the phases and the signs that the planets and the moon, all of them, go through.
And so is your sun sign the time you were born and the moon sign, or are they all connected from that time you were born?
Right. So the sun sign is for the month. So you're in Aries, but so there's 30 days of movement through the sign of Aries. The moon travels about every 2.5 hours, it moves 1 degree. Okay. So the moon could be at the end of a sign or the very beginning. It depends. You need to have that ephemeris or the astrological program. And then the rising sign is definitely where you were born and the time you were born.
And so each of them, I'm gathering, has different impact on the potentials. And I like what I read that said it's the potentials for your life, that you still have free will, that you may be more inclined to be, you know, an orator or a surgeon, or, you know, you have the potentialities for that, but it's still on us to practice.
Yes.
Yes,
it's all potential. There's nothing set in stone, and maybe it's because I used to build houses. I always refer to the natal chart as your blueprint for life. And as within construction, there are always changes within the blueprint, whether it's the owner or just structural, because the same thing with our natal chart.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Curtis Williams. He's a practicing humanistic astrologer and Reiki practitioner. And we're kind of talking about alternative ways that we can help ground our mental health or find ways to move forward in our life that might not be on the traditional path. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. So, Curtis, if someone calls you and says, hey, I would like to work with you, what is the process? Why would they seek you out? And what is it that you offer them?
And that's a really good question because, Elizabeth, people come to me when they're in crisis. And so it's already too late. Mm-hmm. Or they hopefully can salvage some things, at least look where this is going. So what a person would do is they call me and want to make an appointment. I would take their birth information and put it in my program and then set them up for appointment and then see them.
And so what kind of things are you able to tell them based on the information they gave you?
Right. A lot of it has to do with the current crisis they may be in, where it's going, and how long. Again, that's potentially. There are so many variables, really, to consider. But that's probably the biggest one.
What about larger issues? Like, we're in the pandemic right now, and people are wondering, when are we going to get back to our life? And is your astrology, your form of astrology, predictive in any way? Would you have seen the pandemic coming from the alignment of the planets? Is it predictive in when it would start to change?
Yeah, well, again, another good question. That's kind of, okay, we have a body. We may have injured a joint. It's a ligament or it's a tendon. So you need a reference point. And we were speaking to this earlier, just before the program. Mm-hmm. And so it just is a matter of, you know, a reference point. So, for instance, we were talking about the pandemic. Well, it's a virus right now. And the planet Pluto, or dwarf planet Pluto, rules the viruses. It rules a lot of things. Each planet does. But so in order to put it in context of a pandemic, that's a worldwide issue, you want to go to each country. And for us, it would be the United States. Look at that chart, progress it to this time or to when it started. Also, a lot of it applies to the leaders of each country. And so there are a lot of things that you need to kind of push out and then bring back in.
So in some ways, would the natal charts of those that are in charge of different countries impact and sway the direction of events?
Absolutely. It's just like a mother or a father in a family. What's going on in their life is certainly going to impact the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between, and I'm going to list all of your certifications, that are the natal astrology, relocation astrology, which I imagine is if you're moving, couple synastry, mundane astrology, rectification astrology. What makes them each unique?
Yeah, well, couples or synastry is exactly that. It's couples. So you put the two people together astrologically and come up with its own chart. And there are other options as well. You put one chart on top of the other. Again, we're using the program here, astrological program. I wasn't certified in each one of those. I was certified as a master astrologer that covers all these particular.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is the certified medical astrologer what it seems to be, helping people guide through their health?
Exactly. Yeah.
So give me an example of something someone you've worked with and discovered through their medical astrology.
Right. Well, most of them have been pretty easy. And I'll give you an example of one that wasn't. And it was with a young woman, her early 30s. And I wasn't doing a chart for her astrologically, but I was giving her Reiki sessions. And she had cancer. And for the life of me, I couldn't find out what was going on. Didn't show in her chart until, you know, after a bunch of approaches, I finally found what was going on. But it's just a matter of it. Most people that come to me with astrological medical problems, it's not that hard to see what's going on. And there are like houses for health, planets that may be there, or, you know, it gets a little bit complex, but yeah, there are a lot of things you can use.
So when someone comes to you with an issue and you've kind of tracked it down, then they address the issue, let's say it's a health issue, does it alter their chart?
Well, I'm not quite sure I get that. Because they have an health issue, does it alter their chart?
Your potentiality is such, maybe it's for a medical condition, but then you rectify the medical condition, right? You get healing, you get better. Does that alter your chart in any way?
No, because again, part of the humanistic approach is to keep it all together, mm-hmm. right? As in the individual, in the human body, and not, you know, parcel it out for other considerations.
So it's all part of this, the one big potentiality of the story.
Yes, absolutely.
And so another one of the things listed on your resume was a shamanic practitioner.
Yes.
Where does that come from, and how does that influence the work that you do on a day-to-day basis?
Okay. All right. So we started with the story of how I got into astrology, and then it was Reiki, and then it was dream study, and And it goes on and on and on. And in between those, shamanism was a very strong interest on my part. So I studied with some shamans and, you know, took classes. It's anybody can be a shamanic practitioner. Not everyone can be a shaman. And it really doesn't matter if you're a practitioner, you're doing a lot of things anyway. But the shamanism came later after the astrology and the Reiki, medical astrology and dreams and so on and so forth.
So how does, what does, well, and we can jump into the Reiki too, because I'm just curious to know like how that, all that comes together, that integration of these practices. How does Reiki, and for people who don't know, describe what Reiki is.
Right, okay. Reiki is an energetic modality, and how you apply it is with hands on or hands above the person, working with their energetic body. And with Reiki, it's not hard to become a Reiki practitioner. You can do it in a matter of days and then go out and convince people that they're going to allow you to put your hands on them and hopefully make them feel better. So, but you know, how they all came about is just, you know, okay. I have a great story for you about the Reiki. I was already studying astrology, but I still needed to do outside work. So what I was painting a house. I had my sprayer going and I hear this bum, 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 bum. And I'm really hard at hearing, and I don't know how I heard it, but I did after a couple of times. This person was persistent, and I looked, and it was next door, the person next door, and she was cleaning the house, and she said, how about if you paint our house, and we'll trade you for Reiki? And I had been trying to find these people for years, specifically those people, and I wasn't looking anymore, but then I found it. It was really interesting.
They were Reiki practitioners?
They were Reiki masters. And so Reiki masters teach, and then Reiki practitioners do. You know, they practice Reiki.
And so, well, I want to go into more detail of what Reiki looks like and how it's utilized, but it sounds like a lot of your own personal experiences have opened you to wanting to share this with others. That each piece of your life has kind of opened you up to being a healer for others.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not how I intended, as evidenced by earlier statements, but yeah, each different modality has led to another, and it's still going. I mean, there are ecstatic body postures. They're, you know, using crystals. They're, you know, dreaming, all of these modalities you can apply to your life. And it's just been really fulfilling to me, considering that, you know, I really wanted to build houses for a long time, but it just wasn't going to happen.
And in some ways, you're just working with houses in another form. You're working with the human house and not the physical houses.
Right.
You're listening to my guest, Curtis Williams. He is a practicing humanistic astrologer. He's also a Reiki practitioner. He's a dream analyst. He works with subtle energy. He is an ecstatic body posture instructor and a shamanic artist or shamanic practitioner. So a man of many, many talents in the healing arts world. If you'd like to ask a question of Curtis, our number is 805-549-8855. We can't take it on the air, but you can ask the question and our engineer Brad will be happy to read it. And Curtis and I will do our best to get an answer to you. You can also follow us on our Facebook page. And if you are an Instagram person, we are Instagram Live right now. And thank you to everyone who's tuned in on Instagram Live. It's nice to see you there. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to continue our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of a gentle on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up her.
You're listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Let's return to Elizabeth Barrett and her guests on KCBX.
All right, so Curtis, I'm dying of curiosity because I threw out my birth date and time to you when we started.
Yes.
And I just, for my curiosity, what did you find? What is the sun, moon, and rising? And what does that mean to me in this moment? Because I'm turning 60 next month. So I guess I need to know.
Yeah, milestone. Well, I didn't apply, and I can in a moment if you'd like, where the planets are now. But for you, you have a Leo rising and a Leo moon. And so that's like what we call in the biz, like a queen complex. You would have done really well as an actress. Let's just say that.
What I do for a living. And did you say a queen complex?
Yeah, for me, it's king, just because of the dual Leo in your chart. That's a lot of, hey, guys, I'm here. Look at me. And that's fine. I have a Leo moon as well.
So does it matter that I'm married to a Leo as well?
That explains a lot. I mean, we're attracted to those three major components of our chart, the rising, the sun sign, and the moon sign. And invariably, we are attracted to either the opposite of our moon or sun sign or the same. Yeah.
And so how would I use this information, like moving into the next period of my life? What is it that I would be looking for if I was going to, because I'm trying to get into my listeners' heads. What is it that I would call and ask you, based on this information?
Okay, well, what I'd need to do first, and that would be look into your chart. So I'm looking right now, and yeah, okay. So they're just looking at it, because I haven't really analyzed your chart.
And this don't make me nervous now, Curtis.
Yeah. I would say right now is a really great time for relationships and working within the community because of the planet, transiting planet Jupiter's in there. I would look to the slower moving planets like, Saturn, Uranus, and let's see. And so, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for things changing within your profession, but in a good way.
That's good. All right. We'll leave it at that because then I can go out on a high note. So if anyone has a quick question for Curtis and find out how you could be helped by him, our number is 805-549-8855. And Curtis, let's jump to the Reiki piece,
the
energy movement. I talk about that and how that works, because you said briefly that it was, laying of hands, but can you do that work during a pandemic?
Sure.
When you're not allowed to be with people, have you been able to still see people? And how does moving that energy change someone?
Yeah. Okay. All good questions, and help me come back because I go down one road and
I ask too many questions at once.
Reiki is an energetic healing modality, and there are a lot of different, like literally laying of hands, but that laying of hands usually it runs within families, where Reiki you can learn, and then the Reiki master or teacher embeds certain symbols and mantras into your hands and into your head. And so that's the way it gets to, you know, the people in the outside world. But with this pandemic, a lot of people have really slowed down as far as coming to get it because of that. So, but the fortunate thing with the particular Reiki that I work with, it's called a distance Reiki. It's part of the Reiki that I do. And so you can send Reiki to people that are ill or in need, and you can send Reiki to anything, you know, to help somebody, to make things better, just anything you can apply it to.
Is it an intentionality, or do you put your hands somewhere if you're doing remote work? What are your hands doing remotely?
Right. Good. Yeah, there are a multitude of hand positions. And when you do it remotely, you just think like you would act if that person was there. So you just, in your head, you're moving around their body and putting your hands where you feel they need to go.
And you said at the start that it's literally the laying of hands and it runs through families. Are you talking about that people who have that healing capacity of the laying of hands, that's passed down almost like the ability to be psychic is a generational thing, but Reiki itself can be taught the yes. ability to move. So then clearly we all have the capacity to tap into our energy fields.
Sure. Because, I'm sorry.
And so is there a self Reiki, or is yes. it always someone else having to do that?
No, if you're a Reiki practitioner, you can apply it to yourself. But one of the things that I've found and through my students as well, it's always easier to apply it to someone else than it is to yourself.
Why is that?
good question. I don't know. I mean, why, you know, back in the day, the shoe cobbler made shoes for the entire town while his children had no shoes at all. It's, we think of other people first and forget the ones, you know, that are most important.
And what are some ways that you have helped people through your Reiki practice?
Yeah, you'd have to ask them, but what I've heard is just, you know, a lifting of a burden, and whether it's a physical, a spiritual or emotional burden, all of those aspects are considered in any kind of a Reiki session, at least in my mind, and with what I do and what I teach my students.
And how long does it take generally for someone to feel a shift in the energy?
The person coming for the session?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of times it's right on the money, right as soon as you put your hands on them. And I'll tell you, a lot of times, first time clients, they do cry. They cry quite a bit at the very beginning. They just, it just lets it all out. And that's the beginning to their healing.
And how do you know, this might be too specific, but as a practitioner, when you, you know, because I read also that it's laying of hands on, but also maybe not on the person, but just covering above them.
Right.
How, what does it feel like for you when you encounter a stuck place or an energetically charged place or discharged
right.
place?
Right. There are methods for clearing that. And that's taught within, you know, the classroom as well. So it's not hard to move through it. And that's, I'm glad that you picked up on that. Most people don't, you know.
So how, but for you as a practitioner, what does it feel like in your hands when you've come upon?
A number of things. It can be cold. It can literally feel like a block, a resistance. Yeah. Those are the major ways that I find them.
I'm assuming then, I'm doing my own self Reiki right now. When you're moving the hands, maybe over the body.
Yes.
You're saying you're like a block, almost as if your hands would stop moving instead of just kind of just easy flow. I'm imagining water that would be flowing. And if it's not, your hands would literally want to stop in place.
Yeah. Well, maybe not your hands, but your hand. Fingers. And so as a Reiki practitioner, they're using their hands and they are scanning the body, but that's usually towards the end of the session. So you're not looking for it unless you find it while you're doing the different specific hand positions. Yeah.
And so you're one of the trainings that you mentioned is an E3, emotional energetic evolution. Can you talk about what that means?
Yeah, that's something I got certified in quite a number of years ago, and I really should update my web page. That is a certain modality that had to do with a Dr. William Marion. I don't know if you've heard of him. Anyway, it's a healing modality similar to Reiki. You use your hands to find out where the energy is blocked, and a lot of the concepts are from kinesiology.
So is there a research-based medical component to this, or is it more of a faith-based piece? You know, is it a...
Yeah. Again, I would have to defer to William because he was really trying to bring it to the forefront. I had him on my show so he could talk about it. But these kinds of breakthroughs or modalities are not easily accepted by, you know, the larger community.
Yeah. And so what do you do? I mean, imagine that there is a network of Reiki practitioners.
Yes. Yes.
So how do you work within the community? You know, how do you, what kind of work do you do to kind of, I don't know what the word I want to use is, but not like to bring this practice more into the mainstream? Because I have to tell you that I've come across Reiki 3 times in my professional career. Okay. And it was with 3 different clients that I had. They were really struggling with addiction, all 3 of them. And all 3 of them had life-changing experiences with Reiki. It, like, I want to say cured them because addiction is a lifelong thing, but had changed their life. And so I've always been curious why it was so rare that I came across someone who'd used Reiki and had such success, and why it's not more part of our mainstream practices. Because as I said, my only 3 experiences were phenomenally successful.
Okay. Well, I'm a Reiki master in 3 different lineages. And let me tell you, there's a bunch of them out there. I have it's called a Reiki source book by Franz Stina. Anyway, he's in Australia. And so there's a ton, and they're listed in the book. But one of the 3 branches that I work on is specifically has the mantra and the symbol specifically for addictions. So the other 2, I never crossed. So it's rare for a number of reasons, because to discuss addiction is really a taboo. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Addiction is, it becomes fragmented as you get older and is left untreated. And so then it goes off into so many ways. And that's another problem. But people that have addictions, and you're working specifically, there are specific hand positions and symbols to work with that. So it's just a taboo, I think. That's why you don't come across them very often.
And so what is it about Reiki that would have such success with addictions? Is an addiction, because I don't know how I would envision addiction as a stuckness in a body. I mean, I don't know how I would describe it, but I'm just curious why Reiki would be so successful dealing with addictions.
Okay, well, I don't know if we're talking success, maybe breakthroughs.
Breakthrough, that's a good point.
And there is a difference between addiction and dependence, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and then because psychology is strongly based on astrology from my experience, there's that 4 stages of psychoanalysis. That is what? Confession, discussion, education, and then transformation. And that's a quaternity. And so the same thing with astrology. But, you know, addiction and the certain specific hand position, why they aren't more involved with the other branches, I don't know.
Okay.
We'll like to talk about them.
Well, I guess, you know, the conversations like this are challenging because it's not rooted in a scientific field that is, you know, in a journal and paid for by insurance. And so I think that's what makes it challenging. And in some ways, I'm listening to you talk, and it's almost like trying to describe energy. It's trying to make energy a solid form, the conversation that we're having. Because I'm trying, you know, I don't think there is a, it's not like you break an arm, go back to your building metaphor, you break an arm and then you set the arm and then the arm goes, it never is the same, but it sets and is functional again. But when we talk about the soul or the psyche or the energy being that we are, when something is out of balance or broken, you don't see it casted and then the cast comes off and it's healed. It's so much harder to quantify or qualify it.
Well, there are five layers of the human energetic field.
Okay.
And that's the physical, the etheric, the emotional, mental, and spiritual layers. And so each one of those specifically deals with certain things. And so as a energy practitioner, knowing that, I know which layer to work on, where to work on it, and then what the history is. And so there are things that you can do. And interestingly enough, and through LinkedIn, the wonderful webs that we have now, a doctor of osteopathy got in touch with me just a week ago, and he sent me a copy of his book. And he is so blown away with Qigong, and he wants the medical community to get more behind it. So medicine is trying, but not really, but they're trying to get behind the things that you're talking about.
And I think it takes multiple modalities. So there isn't just one piece, as I said at the top of the show, that we can't just say, I'm going to go to a talk therapist and everything will be fine, that we are layered. And what were those five energies? What were they related to again?
Yeah, the physical energy field that speaks for itself, but specifically the skin, the bone, organs, and blood. Then the etheric, ether is the gas, so it's not easily recognized, but it has to do with, it's the blueprint of the physical body. Okay. And then the emotional energy is centrally located among the five layers. Mental energy is the layer from which ideas spring. And then the spiritual one, where consciousness or higher awareness or dimensions reside. So, yeah, that's good to know, especially if you're an energy worker. And I think we can all heal ourselves. You don't have to be a Reiki practitioner or Qigong master or have an MD. Just becoming aware of your body spiritually, physically, all of them. You can start to heal yourself.
And I think that key is in recognizing that we are more than the physical body. Yes. And in many ways, we're more than the consumption body of just taking in fuel. And I think that and it comes up so often, but we're raising generations of young people to see themselves only as their physical body, right? What they can produce and studying STEM and what their career is going to be, that we don't spend a lot of time with the other four energies. We don't teach young people to learn those parts of themselves. And we talk about being concerned about automating humanity. And I think that's one of the ways we do it, is we ignore the other ways that we are energized as human beings.
Yeah. Spirituality is not something most people are comfortable talking about. Mm-hmm. So
you're listening to my guest, Curtis Williams, a practicing humanistic astrologer. We're just kind of filling our way through his different practices, his modalities with humanistic astrology, and as a Reiki practitioner and a shamanic practitioner. And I'm curious, why do you love this work so much? What have you found the most satisfying in dealing with people?
But helping other people, which helps me. And I think that's really the common understanding, is when we help others, it makes us feel good as well. So we want to continue that. And that's what I strive for, is to help other people. And to be honest with you, Elizabeth, the other modalities have come from my own research, because I want to know, just like lucid dreaming or conscious dreaming, that type of thing. And then you find out certain information that you can apply to other people, situate. And so it's just an ongoing evolution.
Well, in hearing you describe and also reading all of your areas of interest, you sound a bit like a modern day Jung, because that was part of his, you know, journey into himself, was looking through his dreams and lucid dreaming, and humanistic astrology, as I read it, has some ties to Jung and kind of the spiritual and the archetypes, which Jung was so fascinated with. Do you see that connection?
Well, I do. And that's a great observation. All this information is within ourselves, you know, and once we start picking and removing, or at least pushing away, opening up, then you start to find out a lot of things about yourself and find out that you're not any different than your neighbor or your, you know, your partner.
And I think one of the challenging pieces of, you know, you have to have the time, I think, to immerse yourself in these practices. I mean, going back a little bit to the Jung description, kind of the ha-ha about Jung was that his wife fed him, cooked, you know, took care of his house, took care of his children, which freed up all of this time for him to do all of that inner work and that traveling and exploring of his processes. And I wonder if sometimes the challenge, and I would feel this for myself, is having the actual time to go down the rabbit hole of all of these different practices. And so it maybe becomes overwhelming and people just shut down. It's like, I don't have time to do yoga and meditation. And now I have to look at astrology, and then I have to work on some Reiki, and now I'm going to take in Qigong. I think that becomes overwhelming, that people just shut it all out, because how do you have time to even go into it?
Right. Well, for me, it's been a 35-year process. And I found out very early on that I wasn't going to be able to do what I wanted to do, which is a big thing. And you're right. These take a lot. It's a lot of self-involvement and studying and interaction with other people. And so the timing of it all is very important. And you can't do it. I didn't really break out until I raised my family and they were out on doing their things. And I always tell my students, I wish I would have started earlier, but yeah, it takes a lot of time.
I don't know if you have the time, because again, we'll just keep going back to good old Carl Jung. He even said, you know, you can't really do that inner work until you're 56 or older, because everything before that is building your family and building your career and doing the external work. And then that last later part of our life, you get to do the internal piece. But then, you know, time feels so precious. I didn't start, but I wonder if we even have the capacity to do a lot of that work well before we're 60.
Well, Alan Watts addressed that as well, and he says when you get into your 50s or 60s, you don't have the energy to do those things, so pick and choose wisely.
Of which things, like your external interests or your internal interests?
Well, either one of those, because we know, I think consciously, certainly subconsciously, we know what direction we want to go. And it's just a matter of investigating it and discussing it, getting it out in the open. Keep a dream journal.
I like that. Yes, keep a dream journal. And why do you say specifically a dream journal?
Because it gives you a lot of, as we were talking about just a bit ago, archetypal information. Mm-hmm. And I think you're a Jungian, I'm just assuming. There are certain parameters which within the dream can go, and you don't let it out any further than, you know, what you already believe it to be. So if you have a dream journal and you look back a year from today, what you wrote, you're so different than when you wrote that. And so that's an evolution there. And you see that. You can feel it.
And I guess, to kind of close things up today, if someone was interested in more of their inner journey, what are, you just said keep a dream journal, so that would be one. Now, if people felt like, I only have time to do three things in my life, three explorations, what would you encourage people to look into?
Yeah, have discussions like what we're having right now, the dream journal, and then make a list of the things that you think you'd like to go after, and then go after them. Yeah, it's today's day and age. It's hard to do any of that. And like I said, it's been over 35 years since I started, and things were much simpler then. At least that's how I look at it. And with the advent of the internet, people, they want to have their interest renewed in 5 seconds. So it's up to the individual.
So having the patience, I guess, to stay with any practice is challenging at any time. But I would agree that now more than ever, because on any given day, I get requests to, you know, talk to a yoga person or a Qigong person or a Reiki person, or, you know, there are so many different ways that people are passionate about their healing and their work. And that can be overwhelming as well, to choose one and say, I'm going to go all in on this, but then you have to have the patience to go all in long enough to get some benefit.
Right. You need a passion, and we all have passions. It's a matter of just pick and choose and, just going out and doing it, because we're not here forever, you know?
That is true. That is the truth. It goes very quickly. And of course, it's all wasted on the young, as they say. As soon as we got to the place of any wisdom, the time becomes short. Curtis, if people were interested in getting in touch with you, if they would like to have a chart read or work with your Reiki practice, how do they contact you?
Sure. Thank you. Just type in curtis@astrologyreiki.com, and that take you to my website, and all my contact information is there.
curtis@astrologyreiki, R-E-I-K-I?
Yes.
.com, and I'll have Sophie, our wonderful intern, throw that up on the website. I really want to thank you for coming and chatting with me today. And again, you're a man of so many interests, and I feel like we only tapped in a little bit, but I appreciate your sharing this, and you've given me a lot to think about.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can find us on Facebook. Thank you to those that joined us on Instagram Live today, and I appreciate you hanging out. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can always podcast wherever you get those podcasts. I look forward to continuing our conversation next Tuesday at 2. Until then, thank you for listening and supporting Public Radio KCBX.
I've just closed my eyes again, climbed aboard the Dreamweaver train, trying to take away my worries of today and leave tomorrow behind. Ooh, Dreamweaver, I believe you can get me through the night. Ooh, Dreamweaver, I believe we can reach the morning light. Fly me high through the starry skies, maybe to an astral plane. Cross the highways of fantasy. Help me to forget today. Still may be some time.